Welcome to Inside Scoop Live. Hi, I'm Irene Watson. I'm your host for today. Well, today I'm really, really delighted to be speaking on the phone with Katina Makris. She's the author of Out of the Woods, Healing Lyme Disease, Body, Mind, and Spirit. This book is part memoir where Katina shares her 10-year experience in recovery from misdiagnosed Lyme disease. The second part is a treatment guide from Katina, a veteran homeopath and intuitive healer. Our conversation will inform you of Lyme disease, its stages, and mending the body, mind, and spirit. But first, I'd like you to know a little bit about Katina. Katina Makris has worked in national health care for 26 years as a classical homeopath and intuitive healer. She is a former popular newspaper health columnist and a past board member of the Council for Homeopathic Certification. Katina is a dynamic, as you will hear, well-loved natural health care educator and public speaker. She's a graduate of Duke University and the Still Point School of Integrative Life Healing. Hi, Katina.
Hi there. How are you, Irene?
I'm doing great, and I'm so glad to be talking to you because this is a topic that needs to be talked about. And listeners, I just want to remind you again that Katina's book is titled Out of the Woods, Healing Lyme Disease, Body, Mind, and Spirit. But before we go any further, Katina, please just inform our listening audience the synopsis of the book or sort of a brief outline of what it's about, and then we can carry on with the conversation.
Sure. Out of the Woods, Healing Lyme Disease, Body, Mind, and Spirit is two books in one. It is the chronicle of my 10-year healing journey from Lyme disease that was not diagnosed for the first 5 years. So I was very ill and bedridden, and my life that I had built and cherished and valued so greatly as a homeopathic practitioner and newspaper columnist got stripped away from me as illness entered and drained me of all that I loved. And then we finally get a Lyme disease diagnosis, but how do we go about mending me? Because I am so very depleted and broken, both physically, emotionally, and spiritually, which I think so many people can relate to with serious, serious chronic illness. And it's really an inspirational story because it does have a positive ending, and some very magical things happened to me in my journey, which I share, that I think are not unique to me and others will relate to in a powerful way. And then the second half of the book, which is called the Nuts and Bolts section, is my healthcare provider voice, which gives clear guidance and information on the specifics of Lyme disease and its co-infections, both signs and symptoms, diagnoses, laboratory testing, and then the very valuable treatment options, which include antibiotics and pharmaceuticals, along with the wonderful complementary medical approaches of homeopathic medicine, naturopathic, acupuncture, Rife technology, metaphysical healing, and more.
Wow. This is quite a journey that you were in. And my goodness, 5 years without a diagnosis.
Yeah, it was really a very difficult time. I got ill in the summer of 2000, so that's 12 years ago now. I was in my early 40s in the picture of health, living, you know, a very outdoorsy life in a pretty rural section of New England. And I got mysterious ill one summer and thought it was a flu. And it seemed odd to me that I couldn't recover, being that I was a natural health care practitioner and had so many tools at my disposal. And over the next years, I go in and out of wellness and collapse using my supportive homeopathic remedies and acupuncture, and I'd boost myself up to a point and then come slipping down and in and out of doctors and hospitals and scans, you can imagine. And finally, I get to the point where I'm so incapacitated that I can't even get out of bed. I need help showering. I can't even walk 10 steps across the room without somebody holding me by the arms and guiding me and holding me, you know?
Wow.
and severe depletions and all kinds of palsy symptoms, violent migraines. I've even had started dementia symptoms, which was frightening in my 40s.
My goodness. So why was it not diagnosed? Is it just that at that time that it wasn't that common? Or, you know, I'm just having a hard time understanding why somebody didn't, you know, realize what this was. Is there no specific testing for Lyme disease?
Well, it's a big problem, yes. It was a combination of things. First off, Lyme disease was more or less identified in the mid-1970s in Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
And the area surrounding Connecticut, Long Island, Massachusetts, New York State, were pretty hip to the fact that this organism, which is carried by the insect, the tick, was present. And for a long time, the medical world thought that it was localized to this region, which was really false. It had already been, moved around the country by migratory bird patterns and animals as they move, because ticks ride along on the back of deer and birds and everything. So it had made its way up to northern New England. It had made its way over to Texas, at Florida, California, all kinds of places. And for several decades here, doctors weren't aware that it was present in different parts of the country. So some doctors aren't alert to the symptoms, so they aren't even thinking to test for it. And then the second part of the equation, which is more upsetting really, is that the laboratory testing to identify the organism in your bloodstream is very, very faulty. The commercial labs have like over a 60% error rate. So you go to a doctor and he or she might think this does sound like Lyme disease, and they run the lab test and you come back with a negative, and so then they just dismiss it and say, no, it's not Lyme. And that happened to me, three different tests at tippy-top hospitals like Dartmouth-Hitchcock, Lahey Clinic, et cetera. Uh-huh. And it's not uncommon. This happens all around the country and world, that the standard testing that they use, this ELISA test from a commercial lab, is not accurate. So we now, fortunately, in the past 5 or 6 years, have gotten some excellent testing out of specialty labs. One's called Igenics in California, another's Clonjin in Maryland, that are just focused on Lyme disease, and they're coming up with better diagnosis earlier.
Oh, and they just specialize in Lyme? Wow.
Yeah.
So that's exciting. I understand that Lyme disease has even surpassed HIV as the number one fastest-spreading infectious
disease. That's very true.
Wow.
I know, and it's frightening because everybody's at risk to it, you know, because little children playing in the yard, or campers, or people going and retrieving like a beach volleyball out of the dune grass at the beach. You know, these are all places that ticks could be, and they might, you know, climb on board and you don't even realize it.
Yeah.
And so we're all very vulnerable. We all, a lot of us have pets.
Of course.
And pets can bring them into the house. And the ticks also, in the springtime, especially now at this time of year, when they hatch out, some of them, the deer ticks, which are so tiny to begin with, they're only the size of a freckle.
Mm.
But the new ticks, the ones that have just hatched out, the juvenile ones, they call them nymphs, you can barely even see them, Irene. They're like tinier than a pinhead.
Wow.
So it's kind of it's upsetting because climate change has allowed ticks now to winter over in the more hardy climates of the Northlands and in the mountainous areas that they didn't really survive in before. And then, as I said, the migratory bird patterns. And they also think that this organism, this Lyme disease organism that they identified in the 70s, is a more aggressive bacteria than the one that had been around for generations in the past, you know, hundreds of years. They used to call it rheumatism in the old days.
Right, right.
And then the Native Americans called it deer fever, but it was milder. So there's a lot on the plate regarding Lyme disease right now. And what's also probably important to differentiate is that there's three stages to the illness.
Yes, I was reading about that. I had, you know, until your book came in for review and I'm talking to you, I had really very little information on it, but I did. Let's talk about those three stages.
Yeah, and this is really important.
Mm-hmm.
As a individual, it's important that you learn about this because, some, as I said, not all doctors are knowledgeable, and we can mention that in a little bit too. But the first stage is what they call the acute phase, and that's when you've just gotten bitten by the tick. And if that tick is carrying the Borrelia organism, it more or less is injecting it into your bloodstream.
Sure.
And you feel like you're coming down with the flu, which is what I felt that summertime. I felt
uh-huh.
achy. You kind of have some mild chills. I had a stiff neck. You could be dizzy, headachy, you know, weak, just like you're kind of coming down with the flu, that
sure.
achiness. And the peculiar thing is, though, that it doesn't turn into like a respiratory flu where you start then, you know, getting a runny
uh-huh.
nose and a cough and all of this. You just sort of stay in this mild, achy place. And some people will get frank symptoms like a very swollen knee, or they'll get that bullseye target rash. Some people have heard about that, which is like a red circular rash with a dot in the center.
Red. Uh-huh, uh-huh.
But not everyone gets that. Only about 50% of the people.
Oh, really? Because that's because that's what I thought Lyme disease was, is you get this circle.
Right.
Oh.
And so some people will, especially people that have more sensitive skin,
uh-huh, uh-huh.
They will be the type that would show up with the rash. But, like, I have an olivey skin because I'm Mediterranean,
uh-huh, uh-huh.
and I don't tend to get a lot of skin scrapes or inflammations easily. And a lot of people don't. You know, it just depends on your, you know, immune system.
Sure.
So if you see that bullseye rash, you want to get to the doctor immediately. But if not, if you're having this flu-like symptoms that don't really seem, you know, like anything familiar to you
uh-huh.
or that are lingering, and if you have a weakness or fuzzy head and, you know, dulled kind of thinking and a malaise, like you just don't have any oomph, you definitely want to get to the doctor because that's the early sign
uh-huh.
of the Lyme
uh-huh.
infection. And then what happens is most of us who are healthy have, you know, very vital immune systems, and children in particular. Our immune systems work really hard, and it tries to tamp down the infection by making lots of, you know, white blood cells and lymph cells and to fight it down. And many of us can arrest the infection, and we go into kind of this secondary phase where you've maybe recovered from that flu-like feeling, but you just sort of feel a little off.
Uh-huh.
And you just can't quite attribute it to anything. And some people that are very robust actually don't have any symptomology after like a couple of weeks.
Wow.
So this is why it's such a tricky illness. And so now months could go by,
uh-huh.
and it could be 2 months later or 3 months later or 6 months later, and the secondary symptoms start to show. And this is when we start seeing things like a lot of fatigue, chronic headaches, stiff joints or stiff necks, really characteristic,
uh-huh.
migraine headaches, a Bell's palsy, digestive upsets. Some people get a lot of neurological symptoms early on, like anxiety and insomnia and sort of irregular mood swings, are very depressed.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
So it fits into this, you know, kind of constellation of what a lot of people call chronic fatigue syndrome.
Yes, yes.
Or fibromyalgia.
Right.
And within the Lyme disease community, we're learning more and more and more that maybe as many as 75% of chronic fatigue syndrome and fibromyalgia is actually Lyme bacteria that was never properly diagnosed.
Oh, wow, that's a scary thought.
Very. But, you know, if you could identify that, then there's even hope for your chronic fatigue and fibromyalgia because you can treat the bacterial infection
uh-huh,
and
uh-huh.
make some strides. And also arthritic symptoms, too. Like up here where I live in my area, I know at least 3 or 4 people in their 30s who were diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis.
Uh-huh.
And it actually ended up being Lyme disease.
Wow.
So it shows up in the secondary form depending on your kind of natural body composition and genetic strengths and weaknesses, you know, it'll move and kind of settle into the system maybe that's the weakest for you. So, you know, like some it might come up, as we said, in this sort of arthritic form.
Right.
Another, it might be more digestive problems, some irritable bowel syndrome and food intolerances and gluten allergies, et cetera. Other people like me, it hit and I had violent migraines and stiff necks a lot and this profound weakness that was, you know, very much like chronic fatigue syndrome. And others, just a lot of that fibromyalgia pain and the depression and just, you know. So it's that secondary phase, Irene, is where a lot of people struggle for years and years and then they end up doctor hopping.
Sure. Because they're not feeling well.
Right.
And but nobody's helping them.
Right.
And
and this is where the illness has affected. I mean, some people are saying that, you know, 2-3 million people in the country could be infected and don't even know.
Sure.
I want to be hopeful. Now that I've lived through the illness myself and I'm working so now with the Lyme disease community, and some wonderful cutting-edge doctors are doing new tests, and of course they're trying to develop new treatments, but a big piece of this is helping educate both the public to be aware of what the symptom picture looks like, and there's some good websites online that identify these, and you can take symptom questionnaires. And then the second piece, which is a little bit more of a political piece, I'm not involved in it, but many others are, is that we're trying to work with the Infectious Disease Society of America and the Center for Disease Control for them to define a clear picture of what the chronic symptom picture of this illness looks like, because right now they don't have a standard out there for the for doctors to work with. So they only have the acute picture, which is the one I mentioned about when you first get the bite and the early flu-like symptoms. So many doctors are kind of driving in the dark in their own practice, and the patients are walking in with chronic Lyme disease, and they don't even have clear guidelines of what to be looking for.
Wow. You know,
so that's, we have a lot of work.
That is incredible. I'm just kind of almost speechless, because this is just something new for me, too, and I'm learning a lot. Now, you know, okay, so we've got this disease, but, you know, sure, medication, all that kind of stuff does help. But the bottom line is that mind, body, and spirit.
Yes.
You know.
Very true.
That is the bottom line, isn't it? So I want to go into that direction, and let's start with the mind.
Yes. You know what, Irene, though, I did forget to tell you one thing about the third phase.
Oh, yes. I'm sorry.
Yeah, let me just do that quickly. The third phase of Lyme disease usually is when you've had it, the organism in your system for several years. It starts. It's a spirochete sheet bacteria in the same family as syphilis, which means it's a corkscrew bacteria, and it burrows itself from the bloodstream into the connective tissues of the body, and which is like our joints and muscles, and then it moves its way into the nervous system and eventually into the brain.
Wow.
So when it gets to that level, to the neurological level, we see all kinds of conditions like MS, Parkinson's, various palsies, dementia, bipolar disorder, schizophrenia.
Wow.
Because it's moved itself into the brain, and of course it's affected the neurotransmitters and the different parts of the brain. So, you know, it's very disturbing because it's caused, you know, some damage at this point, and now it's sort of like a catch-22. You know, are you on medication for dementia or for Parkinson's, or is it really the Lyme? And this is where you need a very good Lyme literate physician that knows what they're doing, so that they can work with the antibiotic and pharmaceutical therapies to knock out the infection. And, you know, like me, the dementia cleared.
Well, of course.
People can recover, but it's important to get up to a Lyme literate physician. But yes.
And we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Inside Scoop Live is a global internet-based broadcast specializing in interviewing published authors about their current books and areas of expertise. Join us and hear both well-known and upcoming writers talking candidly about their life experience as well as the business of being an author in today's literary world. Always interesting and current, we strive to bring our audience high-quality discussions that spotlight a vast diversity of authors in the field today. Our interviews are available 24/7 through Direct Podcast as well as MP3 download for your convenience. Please visit us on InsideScoopLive.com. Welcome back to Inside Scoop Live. Today I'm talking with Katina Makris, author of Out of the Woods, Healing Lyme Disease, Body, Mind, and Spirit. Hey, as you've heard so far, Lyme disease can be a very devastating disease if misdiagnosed. Please continue to listen because there's just so much more.
Now let's go to your mind, body, spirit area. That's my favorite too.
Mine too. So let's start off with the mind.
It was interesting for me, Irene, because, you know, having worked in natural medicine for 20 years as a homeopath, I was very attuned to the holistic model of we are beings and we live in harmony with our environment, and that I always felt it was good to take care of myself and, you know, eat holistic organic food, and I lived a lifestyle with meditation and moderation and exercise, you know, 30 years ago before it was kind of hip. But I was just fortunate to have found that, you know, orientation that was comfortable for me. And I, as a homeopath, really worked with people living a holistic lifestyle. Well, this illness took me on such a journey, and I experienced, you know, such trauma physically and emotionally and spiritually, because physically I got so depleted and emotionally I became so weary and frightened and saddened by everything that happened to me and the losses and the isolation of being trapped at home alone and, you know, no answers from the healing professions of how to help me get well, that my spirit broke too. And it was a really, really dark time to, you know, feel so fractured and fragile. And I knew I needed to heal on many levels, and I didn't even know where to begin on the emotional and spiritual planes. But I had really a couple of good pieces that worked for me. Number one, I had a father who was still alive at the time in his 80s, remarkable man who had survived 3 near-death experiences, white light and all.
Wow.
And left for dead in the Philippines in World War II, and, you know, a lot of stories around him. And I can recall him saying to me when I'd be crying on the telephone, he'd say, "You've got to use your mind." He says, "You cannot let this take over you." He says, "You're a survivor, and you know how to use your mind. God gave you a beautiful mind, and you're very creative and smart." And he says, "I need you to use that mind now. Set a clear image of yourself. See yourself healthy." And he'd talk me through this. And I'd say, "Okay." And he says, "Where's the place that makes you happy?" Well, there was a pretty beach in the Bahamas I loved years ago. And he says, "Okay, now tell me about the beach." And I tell him. And he says, "Okay, what are you doing on the beach?" And I said, "Well, I'm lying in the sand." And so I started this by making an image. And, you know, my dad, in his own way, was helping me set a positive affirmation of using my own mind to see myself in a healthy and happy way. And as many of us are learning in this whole study now of what they call epigenetic medicine, which is really studying the biology of belief and how using intention and affirmation actually does good things with our neurotransmitters and starts this whole cascade of the good serotonin, and that in turn, you know, stimulates the immune system. So So I think that was the first piece, was my dad helping me use my mind in that fashion. And then there was a lot of other pieces that I integrated too, but I want to hear what your questions are.
Well, I'm a firm believer of the mind-body-spirit connection. And, you know, when you said the visualization and the meditation, the affirmation, I'm a firm believer of that. Because, as you say, there's even research being done now, and it's proven that it works.
Definitely works.
It definitely works. Let's talk about the spirit component of, you know, the belief system and the connection to, let's say, a higher power or whatever, you know, what worked for you?
Yeah, this is really important, and this was a huge discovery for me, Irene. And this is where I think I expanded as a human being and as a healer through the adversity of this illness. And, I mean, I know it sounds strange maybe to some people, but I really feel that through this illness and this 10-year journey, though I thought I was losing so much, in another way, I've gained because I've grown.
Yes, yes.
And what happened for me in my times of really difficulty, those dark, dark hours, and I went through the, you know, crying in the middle of the night and helped me and praying to God and spirit guides and my mother who was gone and help me. And, you know, I wasn't getting any real feedback in a clear way.
Yeah.
And I felt abandoned at a spiritual level. And I'm like, well, why are these things not working? I was taught as a child to pray and to ask for help. And, you know, the direct things were not there for me in the moment. But I didn't give up. And I have to say there was a day, and I share it in my book in a much more lovely fashion than I can do right now, but I had an experience where I actually feel like I got to the point where I surrendered my emotional struggle with, you know, trying to hold on and fight so to reclaim my life that I had known before, and the doing active, you know, industrious me that had the busy office and the health column and the big garden and social life. And when I finally got to this surrender of, okay, I can't do it anymore. Maybe that's not even what I'm supposed to be doing. And I got into this place of just saying, okay, I was a product of a very industrious family in a very industrious westernized world that was taught to achieve and climb the mountain of success. And when I got to this place where I realized, you know what, maybe it's okay to just be.
Yeah. Yes.
And it's okay to just be still. Maybe this is, you know, people pay money to go to retreats and go to ashrams and do things like this where they're removed from the society and all the hubbub, and they go sit in stillness and they meditate and they appreciate sanctuary and they find inner contemplation. And I realized I'm on a forced retreat. And when I got to this awareness that life was asking me to turn within, and that the higher plane, what people might call God or divinity or spirit, was calling to me and asking me not to push so hard and reach out so far to others, but to turn in and to spend time with my own self and to reach in and really explore what are my own personal gifts and wishes and what is my heart telling me. This was a huge turning point for me, Irene, when I got to that place. And I then actually began to value and cherish my time floating on the sofa. And and then I realized, wow, this is really something very profound and deep for me to journey within. And so then I just unplugged, no television, no computer, no news, no newspapers, and I stayed within, and I started journeying and trusting my visions and meditations and writing and just really spending time with myself. And I started to turn, like it was almost like, you know, like a pivot. And things started happening. A spirit guide came to me, and then I met a really remarkable gifted spiritual healer who really became my mentor, and, you know, a remarkable healing pieces started coming to me, and I found, then we got the diagnosis, I found the right person who actually could properly diagnose the illness, and it's, as I said, I sort of pivoted, and the whole spectrum opened up in a new way. It was very profound.
Wow, I can just, you know, I'm with you, and I'm listening to you, and I can just imagine, because I've had some of these spiritual awakenings as well and can really relate to what you're saying. I'm interested in your spirit guide. Tell us about the spirit guide.
Well, my spirit guide came to me unexpectedly in one of those days when I was floating around on the sofa, where I'd been for 2 years at this point. And it was during one of these times where I was feeling so isolated and alone and questioning how, you know, how am I going to, you know, function and survive in this mode. And I had this experience, and a beautiful, beautiful vision came where I actually was, I don't know, I want to say leaving my body, but I had a distance from my body where I had the experience that I was looking down upon me.
Yes, yes.
And I think some people have had this and they will understand it. And it's like almost like a movie in your mind's eye and your forehead. And there I was seeing, having sympathy and tenderness for me and my fragile body. And as I was, you know, feeling myself from above, looking down, it gave me perspective, really. I felt off to my shoulder on my side this beautiful presence, and I turned and looked. As I said, this is all in my mind's eye. And there to my right was this magnificent bald eagle. And I really get the chills even thinking of it right now. And he slipped under me, and I rode upon his back. And I share it in the book in, a, as I said, a more poetic manner, but the feeling that came over me was that I was not alone, and the mighty presence of this eagle, he spoke to me kind of in a mind, you know, psychic level, and shared with me that I had been through a test of courage, and that this was a time now where I was going to have him as my ally, and that if I could trust in my intuition and not fight myself so much with my conscious mind, but to trust my own inner knowing, that I would be guided and that the answers would come and the right people would align themselves for me, and that he was there to help me follow on this journey and to no longer fight the trickery of the mind and the, you know, trappings of emotion. It was very powerful.
Oh, I mean, I'm sitting here listening to you, and I'm finding it very powerful, and I keep getting goosebumps through my body as I'm listening to you. And so is this spirit guide still with you?
Yes, he's very present, and it's interesting because sometimes, you know, I actually feel like in my daily meditations, I, you know, personally now have a very deep center point and heart space that I'm very connected with after this. This is many years later now.
Sure.
And I sometimes feel like I ask my eagle guide for information, and then I'll just, you know, take a pad and paper and see if anything just comes to me quickly, which, you know, is maybe an internal dialogue I'm having with spirit. And it's a practice for me that works very well. But the other thing that's really remarkable, Irene, and this is where I get confirmation, is sometimes when I'm least expecting it, and I live in a wooded area, and we have only a pair of bald eagles, and they live quite a distance from me, but every once in a while, it's always remarkable to me, the bald eagle will, like, fly over my car, or I'm standing at a soccer game, and I look up, and there's the eagle overhead. No one else saw it. It was me.
Wow.
And then I say, look, look, and everyone's, like, all alight. And it happened to me again a couple weeks ago. I was out with my book, Out of the Woods on the West Coast, which was a very big journey for me, having been so bedridden and ill just 5 years before now, to be traveling out to the West Coast for 2 weeks, 6 events in 8 days, lecturing and sharing my recovery story and Lyme disease awareness, and chock full and driving on highways, which I hadn't done in years, and rain coming down on my windshield. And, you know, it's very daunting in some ways, but so exciting in others. And filling my heart to meet so many people, amazing people with incredible journeys, and so many so seriously ill. And at the very end of my journey, after 2 weeks now of travels and hither and yon and all over the West Coast, I'm coming on the last 15 minutes to the last little spot, and what swoops right across the car of the bald eagle.
Wow. Wow.
And I was like, oh, my gosh, he's been with me this whole time, guiding me.
Of course. My goodness. What a beautiful story.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Katina. Wow. I have learned so much about a disease I knew very little about. Your journey has been incredible. Listeners, I'm sure that your head is really swimming just like mine is right now. We've been given so much information, and as well as an insight into Katina's past experience, I encourage you to visit her website. It is katinamathkris.com. As well, I encourage you to check out her book, Out of the Woods, Healing Lyme Disease, Mind and Body. This is Irene Watson for Inside Scoop Live. Thanks for listening.